Welcome to Traps Lodge, everyone. Happy Thanksgiving from our family to yours. This episode is a little different. We got Trapper's family around the table the night before Thanksgiving and told stories and shared some good laughs and had some good times together. So we hope that you're getting to enjoy your friends or family this week, and happy Thanksgiving.
Hey everybody, welcome to Traps Lodge. Happy Thanksgiving. I'm here with my family. I've got my two sisters and Jane's two daughters, my nieces, Haven and Sharon. So I've got Judy, Jane, my sisters, and then Haven and Sharon, my nieces. And I hope everybody's enjoying their Thanksgiving holiday. And we're going to duck in here and let the girls tell a few stories about our childhood growing up. And my nieces tell some stories on us. So you guys have a good time and enjoy it and laugh if you want to. So Judy wants to go first.
I'm the talker of the family, so I got picked to go first. So,
you gotta talk loud.
Okay, I'm talking loud. So one of my favorite memories of Trapper growing up was we were leaving for school one morning. So we went to a private school, so we didn't get to ride the school bus to school. Somebody had to drive us to school every morning, and we were without fail late like every single morning. And we would have to get out and get the gate, and we'd fight over who was going to open the gate.
No gate.
I won't tell you the saying that we said because it's not really very politically correct. So, but we got out. We were getting in the car to go to school one morning, and Trapper wasn't in the car. And my dad was yelling, like, "Where's Trapper?" And nobody knew where he was. Well, this is about the time that he had been... Somebody had given him some arrows, and so he had constructed his own homemade bow out of like a cedar stay and some string, and he'd been practicing on them. And so, and we also had a bunch of turkeys at our house, and we didn't like the turkeys because at night they would roost in the trees, and we didn't have a garage where we parked the vehicles, and so they would crap all over the cars. And so we drove this brown Cadillac, and we called it the brown Puderscheiss bomb because there was turkey crap all over it every day. And it was embarrassing to like go to town and drive to school and have turkey crap all over your car. But anyway, so we were getting in the car to go to school, and Trapper's not anywhere to be found. And my dad's hollering, "Where's Trapper?" So he comes out of the house, finally like running out of the house. And he jumps in the car. And nobody really happened to notice the fact that he had his bow in his hand with him, his homemade bow. So right before he gets in the car, he had taken an arrow and he shot it like straight up in the air, and then jumps in the car. And my dad sees this arrow like go up, and then we're waiting for it forever to come down. And he was like, "I don't know where it went." So he just starts driving down the driveway, and then out of the corner of his eye, he sees this arrow come down and go straight through a turkey, and it like pinned it to the ground, and this turkey is just like spinning in a circle around. But we're already late for school, so there's nothing, we just gotta keep going. And my dad was not real happy about that, but Trapper was super proud of himself because his bow, he had proof that his bow worked, and it worked well. That was one of my favorite memories of Trapper shooting a turkey on the way to school in the morning before we ever got to school.
They just didn't know about all the turkeys I shot when nobody was looking.
We just happened to bear witness to that one.
Yeah, so what's your adult hunting story, Trapper story, Judy?
I think my favorite adult hunting story with Trapper would have to be after my husband and I, Chris, got married. We lived in El Paso, and we went out. We put in for the New Mexico antelope draw, and because we thought, well, you know, we live right here, so it would be, you know, really easy for us to do. So we went out hunting. He drew, and then Trapper had also drawn that year. So.
And you drew.
And I drew too, I guess. I don't remember. We drew several tags. And so we went to New Mexico, and we were like around Carrizozo. Is that where we were?
Carrizozo.
We were like in Carrizozo area. And so we, Chris had, we went the first day, and Chris shot like a really nice pronghorn. And then the next day, or I guess that same day, we saw another one. And so I still had mine, but I was like, yeah, I don't think I really want to use it. It's fine. I don't like, I'm really not that big on hunting. I just kind of did it, you know, I put in just so, you know, in case we both got one, it would be kind of cool. And so we went out and stalked a pronghorn, and Trepper walked me shooting. It had been a long time since I'd been hunting, so Trepper walked me shooting it, and I think I made a pretty decent shot. At least I didn't shoot it in the eyeball like I did my black buck when I was much younger.
You made a really great, like, 250-yard shot off your... You're sitting on your butt, and you shot on your knees, and you kind of did it very gracefully without really getting rattled or nervous or anything. I mean, at the end of it all, you're just like, oh, that was cool. Like, no big deal.
Yeah. So, but it was fun. We, I think that was like the day after we had stalked one and crawled on our bellies, like through a field of like cactus. And so I was like, just
over it.
Yeah, I was over it. And so I was like, that one just like happened to be kind of within shot. So I was like, okay, sure, I guess. As long as I don't have to stalk it again, then I'll shoot it and have to crawl on my belly through the cactus. So anyway, but I have some really good pictures of some of my favorite pictures with Trapper taking me hunting, and Chris got to get his first pronghorn then too. So that was
good. I remember when you first brought Chris to the ranch at Morris Ranch, and he killed that big whitetail buck. Tell us that story, because I wasn't there. You were sitting in the blind with him. Remember the big eight?
Yeah. So we, growing up, we had the other side of the ranch where we would hunt, and I had kind of my deer blind was Deer Hill. Like I had shot when I was probably my first deer I had ever shot was on Deer Hill. Was the name of that what we named it. And there had just been like a ground blind. But then years later we'd had like a stand that we had put in. Somebody had finally put in like a actual stand blind. And Chris never really grew up hunting. He started kind of hunting when he was in college, and we would come home on the weekends from college to go deer hunting. And I guess
feel so bad for saying so much, because you say I'm just as much.
So he stop.
And you're a school teacher.
So I know. Right. So he sat in the blind, and I guess I was sitting with him. We were supposed to go back to College Station that night, and he begged me, like, let's stay and let's hunt tonight, and we'll go back early in the morning.
Right.
So it was on a Sunday night, and so we stayed, and he got a really nice 8-point buck, and he was so proud of it. He was like super pumped because it was his first like true buck that he'd killed. I think he'd killed like maybe a little spike at some point in time, but that was like his first true buck.
I came across that picture the other day, and I was like, oh, it's like one of the first times I met Chris, and y'all came to the ranch and came hunting, and y'all looked like kids then.
Yeah.
Of course, I look like a kid too, so.
Right. We've all aged a little.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. We've all grayed a little.
Yeah.
So who's next?
Jane.
I'll go.
Okay, Jane's next.
Well, I'm going to start with childhood.
Okay.
There's so many childhood memories of Trapper. One of them is Trapper loved to make jerky. In the third story of our home, we just had like barbed wire strung across the dormer room of his room, and he would just hang meat, raw meat, in his storm room. On the third story. And turn on fans. You would turn on fans, and you'd get in there. You'd like have to go in there and like do like
low crawl.
Yeah, low crawl to get to the other side of the room underneath all the raw meat. Wrecking the three-wheeler.
Y'all ate the jerky though.
Oh, we ate the shit out of it. All kinds of crazy childhood stories, but adult story. My favorite story of Trapper was when we went to South Africa, and Trapper and Hunter and I went to professional hunting school, and our guide, Noel Ross, took us. And
he's here.
All right, Dad walked in, took a little bit of a pause there, and we'll just continue with our story.
Cool. So we were South Africa bound.
South Africa. So we, Trapper and Hunter and I loaded up, went to South Africa, went to professional hunting school in Tarkastad, South Africa. At the end of our schooling, we got to go on safari. So one of our guides, professional hunters there, was, his name was Noel Ross. And amazing human being. Gentleman of gentlemen, and just all around neat guy, and I think we all fell in love with Noel.
He's definitely one of my mentors. I got to see him a few times years later.
Yeah,
catch up with him.
Yeah, just an amazing human being. Anyway, it was Trapper's turn to hunt, and we were hunting eland.
Yeah, I remember this one.
So we were somewhere in near Tarkastad.
In the mountains.
In the mountains. Cold. It was cold. Anyway, we went and drive and glass and drive and glass. And anyway, Phelan got somewhere out in the middle of, I don't know. And Noel spotted an eland. And so we were kind of sitting on the side of a mountain hill.
Large, hike up there to get to them.
Yeah. Anyway, and then the eland was on the other side. There was a pretty good valley below us, and then on the other side was the eland. And I don't know, how many yards was it?
About 300.
300 across, straight across. So, a phenomenon when eland walk, you can hear them click. Mm-hmm. Their
hawks
click. And it's loud if it's real, real quiet. So there was a really, really beautiful eland bull kind of on the other side of the valley on the hillside. And he was walking. He'd go behind trees. And we sat there forever and ever and ever waiting for him to come out behind a tree and for Trapper to be able to get a shot. Anyway, so finally, Noel was like, okay, you got to get ready. He's coming out behind this tree. It could be 5 minutes. It could be 30 minutes, but you got to be ready. As soon as he comes out behind this tree, you just start going. So Trapper was shooting a Holland. 375 Holland and Holland. So Trapper was on my left side, and I was on the right side of Trapper glassing with my binoculars, and then Noel was on the other side of Trapper on his left side. So Trapper had his, we were all standing, glassing, looking, whatever, and that eland stood out behind those trees, and Trapper freestanding, is that what you call it? Standing.
Yeah.
Freehanded, just basically pulled the trigger on that H&H, and the eland fell and started rolling down the hill. And it was like slow-mo of Trapper pulling the trigger, reloading, that case coming out slow-mo out of the corner of my eye, and Trapper reloading and shooting that eland, reloading and shooting that eland. And every time he reloaded and took a shot, it was perfect heart shot within this tight little grouping, but he was rolling down the hill. And so every time he hit the hill, I mean, came down to the side, Trapper would just nail him with that H&H. And it was slow-mo and amazing. And then we had to pack that son of a bitch out of there. So it was a lot of work after that, but it was the most amazing shot I'd ever seen in my life, time and time again. And a beautiful animal, and a memory I will never, ever, ever forget in my mind. So,
when you went to Namibia with Dad, and you earned the name Jackal Jane, tell me about that.
Ah, Jackal Jane. So in Namibia, they have black back jackals, and they're kind of like coyotes in the hill country, and they're. Yeah, they're like coyotes.
And so every
time we would go out, we would ride on the back of the bucky, and we had the little tracker guys and the guide and John Powell, and we were just all driving around, and then I taught him how to call up a black-back jackal. And so it got to the point where Dad would call them up and I would just shoot them as fast as they would run up. And the little tracker guys were just mesmerized that we could actually call up a blackback jackal and then I could shoot them.
And so then when you were with Dad in Namibia and you were shooting your 243, correct?
Yeah.
Which was your favorite rifle then. And you'd shot a kudu bull. You threaded the needle on a kudu bull. And I think John told you that you couldn't kill a zebra with that 243 with one shot.
Yep.
And Dad vouched that you could.
Yep.
And you did.
Yeah, I did.
Again, you shot him right in the heart. Because everything that you shoot, I think you shoot in the heart.
Yeah.
Because I've been hunting with you a long time and seen you shoot some amazing shots also. So since Dad's here.
Okay.
Special guest.
Opie. Dr. Joe Burkett. Dad, I got a question. Where and why and how did you dream up of sending us three to South Africa? What was your intuition in that? Like, what was your thought process? I mean, we grew up hunting and raising lions with you, and a childhood that we all thought was normal, it turns out it's not. But where was your mindset there that you would send us there and not go with us? Like, what?
Well, there were several things that came into play, and the first one was that apartheid, if you know what apartheid is, mm-hmm. was coming to an end. And with apartheid, the end of apartheid in South Africa, I could see South Africa and Southern Africa basically opening up. There were places you could hunt in Southern Africa, but to access them, you had to go through South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And so I saw a huge, possibly commercial opportunity to get in there before anybody else. And so if you'll recall, I went over there before y'all went and contacted the game department, a fellow by the name of Herman Jordan, I believe his name was the chief law enforcement officer for South African Game Department. I hooked up with him and we toured all over South Africa. And so he was the one that made the suggestion to try to get y'all to go to professional hunting, get a PH license mm-hmm. in South Africa to make it work. And something else was going on there too that was probably the biggest impetus is that the professional hunting profession was at one time a 4-year degree. And PHs had to go to 4 years of school, and that school was in Rhodesia at that time, Salisbury, and went to 4 years of college, just like you'd go to a regular college today and come out with a PH degree. And then you had to apprentice for 7 years as an assistant professional hunter, and then apprentice an additional 7 years to become a full PH. And then you could apply for your full PH license and go off on your own. But so it's quite a process, and that has continually, at that point, had continued to deteriorate to where you went to a much shorter version of the professional hunting school to get a PH certificate. And so I wanted y'all to have the opportunity to go to a formal training and become PHs. And I think at that point in time, if I'm not mistaken, Jane became the first lady PH
in South Africa.
In South Africa, yeah.
I remember going to that school, and I mentioned before previously that I don't want to say it was a breeze, but because you had taught us so much growing right. up professionally, and not just from the table setting side or the guiding side, the caping and gutting and skinning side, you had taught us and given us so many tools from an early age that we didn't even know what to do with them. But then once we got to that school, that they were really impressed by
that we knew
most of what they were already teaching.
Knew your skills. And I worked on that hard. I had a lot of respect for the early PHs and who they were and what they did and the kinds of education that they had. They were all extremely well-educated people. And y'all got the benefit of that. And today I think it's a 2-day school and you get a PH certificate. So
I think you gave me a number at one point some years ago. You said when we took that course, I want to say there was around 1,400 or 1,500 PHs in South Africa. Now there's 15,000 or some
crazy number. I think when y'all got your PH certificate, there was, I want to say less than 100.
Yeah.
And of course, I realized that we weren't going to last long in South Africa, because every time Dick and Harry was going to go to South Africa and essentially do the same thing that we did and accomplished, and all the sweet would go out of it. You know, the profit margin would begin to shrink and everything. So, but that was the impetus. Now, I don't know if I've ever told this story or not, but I'm sure y'all are aware of it. I told all of y'all not to make any plans for that summer.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd been working for probably over a year to get that set up, like a year and a half. Finally got it set up. Finally got, at that point in time, the Spring Valley School of Professional Hunting was associated with Rhodes University, if y'all remember Rhodes University at Grahamstown. It was not a direct curriculum, but an indirect curriculum from Rhodes University. Through Noah Ross, and he was the one that was the professor, I guess you'd call him, professional hunter professor. Chappie Scott did nothing more than host it, but Noah was the sure enough professor. So anyway, got that set up, told y'all not to make any plans. I don't think y'all had an inkling of what was going on. And so after, I guess it was Hunter that graduated from high school?
That year,
I think. So after Hunter's graduation, I asked y'all to be available Sunday morning after graduation. So we all sat down around the big table in the Rock House, and I handed y'all your plane tickets and said, I'm taking y'all to the airport.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll never forget the look on y'all's faces. We're doing what? So anyway.
How long I have to pack now?
Yeah. So anyway, and I told y'all to kind of get yourselves together. So and y'all did a pretty good job and traveled pretty light, so. My last instruction that I gave y'all when I left the airport was, when you got over there and got settled in, to please call me. Just to let me know that you were there. Well, and so y'all got on the airplane and left, and I cried all the way home. I cried like a baby. I mean, I couldn't believe I was sending my young kids off to Africa, of all places, in the middle of nowhere. And it was a hugely emotional thing for me. Kind of sucked it up after I got home and sat around and waited for news of y'all's arrival. That didn't happen. I kept waiting and I kept waiting and I kept waiting. And I think that school was 21 days, was that the?
Mm-hmm.
I think it was 21 days is what it was for the training part of it. And then y'all had the field exercises. That was the safari part of it. But so somewhere along about the 21st day, I got a call from Jane finally. Of course, no cell phones in those days.
It was all landline.
It was all landlines
and fax. It was almost like talking on the radio. You had to talk.
Yeah, and then wait.
The delay.
And you wait for them to talk back.
And so I got a call from Jane, and she said, I said, Jane, are y'all okay? And she said, oh, yeah, we're wonderful. We're having a great time and everything. She said, I'm not coming home. So I said, what do you mean you're not coming home? She said, well, we come in all dirty and nasty from the day's hunt and day's work and everything in the field, and throw your clothes on the floor, and you go to dinner and you eat a great meal, and you come back and all your clothes are washed and ironed and on the end of your bed.
Including your underwear.
They wash and starch your underwear. So anyway, I think y'all were over there, what, about 6 weeks?
6 weeks.
I can't remember, but I think it was about 6 weeks. And in the meantime, I got a call from, that was after I talked to you, I got a call from Noah Ross. And he told me that he had never had students like y'all. He said that y'all were extremely knowledgeable, extremely competent, and very capable. And that was before y'all went on safari. So then, about the time y'all started to come home, I called Noah, finally got him. Of course, you know, when you're in the bush, well, there's no way to get a hold of anybody, but finally called and left a message, I guess, with his wife.
Mm-hmm.
What was his wife's name?
I don't remember now.
But anyway, not really nice lady. And I asked her to have him call when y'all got back in. And so he did. I guess y'all had gone back to the airport in PE, maybe.
Yeah.
And he called me, I think, maybe from the airport. And he said, well, that not only were you competent and everything else, but y'all could shoot like a bunch of wizards, he told me. And I said, well, it makes me
proud. We had some good shots. I mean, that whole entire that entire safari that we took that first year, and all of the animals that we killed, I feel like between the three of us, we had some amazing shots.
The only shot, my kudu I wounded.
Well, your kudu you wounded, but that turned out to be part, I think it helped with the tracking. Like, yeah. That's when we really got to apply our tracking and whatever. So it just became part of the adventure.
It was a really hard cording away shot, and that bullet caught a rib and went right up the rib cage and went between the shoulder and the rib cage and never went internal. And then we found that kudu the next morning. I didn't sleep all that night. But I think all of us kids can give our shooting skills to our dad.
Oh, yeah.
And dad taught us how to shoot from a young age, and granddad, too. So, but since I've got Sharon and Haven on board, who wants to go first?
Sharon.
I'll go. So the first story that I remember going hunting with Trapper, he took me out a lot, but the one that I remember is that sticks out to me. We were heading out of the tailgate of a truck, and I had the gun on the back tailgate of the truck, and Trapper was instructing me of where to point and where to look and how to hold it. And he said, all right, from the way that you're standing, you might have to aim kind of between his ears. And I said, okay, I can do that. And so I aimed and I shot, and he had his binoculars up and he was watching the animal as I shot. And sure enough, I shot right between that deer's ears, right over the top of his head. And Trapper said, what the hell are you doing? You shot between his ears, you missed him. And I said, yeah, I shot right between his two ears. And Trapper just shook his head like, oh my God, you have no hope. But we had a lot of experiences after that. We went to the ranch that Hunter was at, and we went coal hunting, and we shot, I think, five deer out of one stand in a matter of 45 minutes.
Yeah, we were shooting coal bucks.
Uh-huh. We went coal hunting, and
I finally taught you how to shoot straight.
Not between the ears.
But my favorite story of Trapper and I going hunting is, I think I was a junior or senior in college. I mean, in high school, and when we went to Wyoming. Mm. And Haven and Mom were going to go up after me. I got to go up first with just Trapper. So it was just Trapper and I. And the first few days, we just piled around in the truck, just kind of scoping everything out. And we went and looked, and he had his range finder and was doing hunting stuff, and I was just hanging out. And first we lost the range finder. Do you remember that? You found there was a coyote that ran across, and you just like gunned it, and then the range finder flew out of the window, and we had to search for a few hours to find the range finder.
Oh, we got the coyote.
We got the coyote, and we drove around for a while, and we saw, you know, there was pronghorn everywhere. We were pronghorn hunting, and I was in flip-flops and a t-shirt, and again, Trapper just shook his head.
You showed up with Steve's old hunting boots that didn't fit you. And we went on a little nature hike, and you were clod hopping around these rocks. After about 2 hours, you were mad, and it was warm.
It was hot.
And we got back to the cabin, and you threw on your Tevas or your flip-flops, and that's what you hunted with the rest of the time we hunted there.
Yeah, we were walking up to the top of a hill, I'll never forget, and I was like, God, this is miserable. And I was in flip-flops, jeans and flip-flops and a t-shirt. Trapper was like, good God. But we piled around, and we sat on the top of a hill and watched, and I enjoy hunting. I wouldn't say it's my favorite thing in the world to do, but I like spending time with Trapper, but we did a lot of sitting and watching. I have a short attention span, so. And then before I ended up killing anything that trip, we had sat on the side of a mountain, and I remember we were both sitting in a sitting position, and you were behind me, and I had the gun resting up on your knee. You had your knee up, and I was resting, and you were teaching me how to, like, breathe and squeeze, because I was like, every time I shoot, the gun just flies up, you know, and so we were learning how to breathe and shoot. And so I was ready to shoot, a deer or a pronghorn in the prone position on a mountain, and that's not how it happened. We were driving around in the truck, and we saw the one, and I believe we just shot it out of the window of the pickup truck.
That's what I did
in
my
mind,
too.
And I still have that pronghorn mount.
So when you girls were little, I remember you and Christian were like 8 or 10. Y'all loved to come to the ranch and shoot black buck or does, and then y'all would play in the gut bucket, and I would show y'all the heart and the lungs and this and that and the other. Well, about the time y'all were 15, y'all quit coming hunting with me. So like all of a sudden y'all found interest in boys. And I remember I would get the phone call like, I want to bring my boyfriend hunting. And I'd be like, absolutely not. Like, you can come back and go hunting, but your boyfriend's not riding my coattails to come hunting. So y'all didn't hunt with me from like age 14 to about 18. And y'all finally got over the boy thing and finally came back and went hunting with me.
Mm-hmm.
So do you remember the first time you went hunting in Wyoming?
Mm-mm. I was too little for that. When it was snowing.
Yeah, we took you and Hunter and I took Sharon
in the old Suburban.
We drew tags for pronghorn and mule deer.
And Sharon was a year.
It was her first birthday.
Yeah, and we went she up had there. Chocolate cake all over her face.
Yeah, we went up there and saw Dave McClure and Linda.
Mm-hmm.
And Linda cooked Sharon her birthday cake, and that was her first snow. We came out of the hotel room, and she was all bundled up. And she walked out of the hotel room and went across the parking lot. Just like spun out across the parking lot. First snow, first hunt. She was a year old. And then we went back the next year for her second birthday.
Yeah, I remember that. I forgot about that, actually. So, Haven, you want to go?
Yeah, my turn. So, Sharon kind of stole my story ideas of the first time I went hunting and then the first time I went to Wyoming.
And wait, what about you when you and Lexi came hunting with me at the ranch?
So, well, the first time we went hunting in La Fonda. And I remember we were sitting in a blind, and I thought I shot the deer. I just pulled the trigger. You shot the deer, but I was sitting on your lap, and I shot the deer. It's like a whitetail or something in La Fonda. I was 6. I sat in your lap, and we practiced shooting before, but I didn't really shoot the deer. You shot the deer. I just sat in your lap and pulled the trigger.
Trapper,
you aimed.
Yeah, Trapper would put it right where we needed it to be.
Trapper aimed. We sat in his
and
lap.
And pulled the trigger.
And we would shoot the deer. that was the deal. And then
we never missed though.
So I don't remember it much, but it was me and Uncle Chris and Uncle Trapper, and I think Lexi, my best friend, and then her brother came. We went up to the ranch. We were driving around in Fredericksburg on the ranch, and I shot a whitetail of some sort. I think I shot a whitetail, and then Lexi, my best friend, got to shoot a black buck, and she shot it, but the grass like slowed the bullet down, so she just wounded it, but it was a perfect shot, apparently. And I think we were 8 or 9, and then we had to like keep going, and she took another shot, and it was perfect again. It was fine. And Uncle Trapper, every time we go hunting together, he gets mad at me because it's always a perfect shot right in the heart. And he's like, I want to take a bite of that and eat that, but I can't because you messed up the heart.
You hunt like your mom.
It's all obliterated and I can't eat it. That's what I remember. Uncle Chris was there. He was proud of us.
What did Lexi's black buck look like? Remember?
It was a curly horn one.
Yeah, me and Lexi, or just me in general, we always get the wonky ass deers because we're like, we are the wonky ass deers of the family. So when I went to Wyoming,
you wanted to shoot that antelope.
I did not want to shoot that antelope. I'm the kid that gets the deers that need to get off the property because they're gonna mess up the breeding and all that bullshit. So I get the ugly ass deers that don't have perfect antlers. Excuse my language.
It's fine.
I get the deer that
so your pronghorn
is funky. So kind of the same story with Sharon, but I had a boot, like I had broken my foot and I was wearing a boot and one shoe for and playing fetch with Nelly with the rocks. I don't even remember where we were. We didn't stay at whatever his name.
John's
house. We stayed in like the little trailer house or whatever.
At the cabin, yeah.
Yeah.
You shot the antelope with that. The one
out of the
one
truck.
One horn went back, went up, and the other horn went down.
Straight forward. one went up, one went right down its face. And we sat around looking, we drove around, looked around, did all we could. And then Uncle Trapper, one day we left John's house. And Uncle Trapper was like, I said, is that the one we're looking for? And he's like, I think so. Pulls out his binoculars and looks, and he's like, yeah, that's your deer, that's your antelope, that's your goat. I'm like, all right. So sit in the back seat right behind Trapper, and I shoot my deer, my antelope, my goat, whatever, right behind, right where I need to. He's upset again that I shot it right in the heart. Can't eat the heart.
Yeah, whatever. But you can shoot prairie dogs.
Oh my gosh. And then in Wyoming we shot prairie dogs, and that was awesome. That was so cool.
She was like, I want to do this all day long.
Because they pop their heads out and then you shoot them and then they explode everywhere. And it's so fun. So funny. It was bad, but it was fun.
I remember prairie dogs.
lots of great stories. Oh, and then one time, I'll just tell another story, I guess. One time I was like, I want to go hunting, whatever. And Uncle Trapper was like, all right, well, I can't go with you. No one's going to go with you. Like, you're going to go sit in a blind by yourself. And I was like, fuck. Sorry. Excuse my language again.
Take two.
But I was like, oh, gosh, I have to go do this by myself. And we're on the ranch. We're on the ranch, like family ranch. And he's like, all right, Haven, puts me in the blind, tells me what to do. I think I was like 13, maybe.
Oh,
yeah. And he goes, Haven, make double damn sure you don't shoot my kudu. I'm like, all right. The whole time I'm stressed that there's going to be a kudu in the back that's going to go, like, I'm going to shoot a deer and it's going to fly right through the deer and hit the kudu and I'm going to kill this kudu. But I'm sitting in the blind and I'm like,
I had a bad experience the week before, so.
Yeah, so he was really pissed off about the kudu. But I'm sitting in the blind and I'm like, oh, this fucking sucks. So this sucks. I pass out. I take a nap, probably like an hour nap, and I wake up and I was like, cool, I'm going to shoot that deer. Shot the deer, sat around for another 2 hours because I didn't have a phone and they weren't around. And then finally they came and picked me up and we found it and it was good. It was fine. Still a perfect shot, like always.
And you didn't shoot the kudu.
And I didn't shoot the kudu. I made double damn sure not to.
What about, who remembers Sharon's fishing story? Do you remember your fishing story?
Which fishing story?
When she caught the carp.
Mm-hmm. I don't know that story.
No, Haven wasn't born yet.
No, Sharon can tell it.
You remember better than I did.
Well, because you were too young. So, and Sharon was little bitty. Spring, I don't know. Creek. 4, 5?
Little.
You were begging. I used to take you perch fishing. I'd had a little Snoopy rod or whatever that you just loved, and I'd put a little worm on the hook, and we'd throw it out there, and you'd reel it in a little perch every time, and you just ate up with fishing.
At the little water crossing there.
At the little water crossing on the Pernas, south of the house, south of the ranch. And one afternoon, it started kind of drizzling, but you were begging me, and pulling on my coattail and saying, let's go fishing. So I'd got the worms, I got the hooks, got the rods, and there we went to the river, and it started raining a little harder, and man, it was like every cast, I'd throw it out there and hook a perch, and I'd let Sharon reel it in, and hand it to the pole, hooked one, and painted it to the pole, and I was baiting the next hook for the next pole, and all of a sudden, this little pole's bent over, and Sharon's got her heels locked down, and she's like skidding down the gravel bank towards the water, and I run, I grab her, wrap my arm around her, and she can't hardly hold on to the pole, and we reel and fight, and it's raining and raining harder, and we're both just soaking wet, and finally we reel up this big old carp, and it was probably a 45-pound carp. I don't know. It was huge. It's as big as Sharon was, or bigger. It was longer than she was tall.
It's huge.
And she had the biggest smile on her face. But by that time, it had rained so much upstream that the river had risen so far that we had to take the long way back home because we couldn't get back across the little water crossing. So that was the best fishing memory of that day. But since then, she's learned how to fly fish from you. Jane, which I remember she used to make fun of you for fly fishing, and now her fiance Zach is a big bass fisherman.
Converted him to fly fishing.
And he's a big firefighter. Big masculine man with his mustache.
How about Zach tells his favorite trapper story?
What? Zach wants to tell his favorite trapper story? So, Dad, Judy already told the turkey story at the front gate. You got any other stories or advice for everybody?
The turkey story.
Where he shot the turkey with his homemade bow.
Oh, my God. Well, I guess to add to the professional hunter school story, I got home from San Antonio, dropping y'all off, and my mother and dad came to the ranch. And so I had to break the news to my mother and my dad that I'd sent y'all to Africa. And I really thought that the next day that the sheriff's department was going to show up and haul me off, lock me up, send y'all to Africa. And I never lived it down. My mother just went completely haywire. Do you remember that, Judy? You were around a little bit.
I was off in college. I don't remember it really.
Holy. Anyway, it was horrible. That was a bad experience with my mother. And she never forgave me for it. What were you thinking, honey?
So Jane told me probably when I was in my 30s that Granny asked when I was going to get a real job.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Oh, yeah. She was always worried about you.
She didn't understand that hunting was my job. She couldn't comprehend that that's what I did for a living.
Yeah.
Was hunt.
And well, later on, after we got established in South Africa and Namibia and stuff. And,
what?
And we're doing...
What from the peanut gallery down there? No? Nothing from the peanut gallery? Go ahead, Dad.
So anyway, after we got pretty well established over there, we had one year that we really did pretty well. I don't remember exactly dollars and cents, you know, where we ended up that year. But I know I came home and we had to go to West Texas to a mule deer hunt. So it was around between Christmas and New Year's. I mean, Thanksgiving and Christmas before I got kind of back and settled in. And so my dad came out and he was always very interested in what we did and all the business part of it. And so I sat down with him, and I got my books out, and I showed him my books, and he went over them, and he was just amazed. You know, I think we'd taken in something that particular year, like gross $300,000 or something. It's a pretty good figure for one year's take. And so he said, well, what I want you to do is I want you to take some time and go in and explain to your mother, you know, what this is all about. So sometime between Christmas and New Year's, I went in and he sat there at the table and listened to us. So I presented to her our whole story and what we were doing and what kind of money we were making and that this was a lucrative business and that we were successful and on and so forth. So I had no more left. And she got on the phone and called Pinky Brown. Well, Pinky Brown had spent his career in North Africa at Tripoli as a geologist, worked for one of the big major petroleum companies, and wanted to know about what was going on, but that she couldn't hardly believe this. She couldn't imagine that we spent $300,000 blowing animals up in Africa, and oh my God. And well, Pinky told her immediately that, well, they didn't have any hunting and around Tripoli and North Africa, they don't have any hunting. So she thought for sure that we were running dope over there doing something. I never did convince her that it was a business proposition. But that was quite an interesting experience trying to explain to her. She was totally against it. Well, she couldn't imagine killing anything anyway.
Can we do another one? Let's stop this one.
And
we got Dad here.
As a matter of fact, I can remember one Thanksgiving dinner when she wanted to know why y'all had killed all the jackrabbits and all the armadillos at the ranch. Do you remember that?
No.
Honey, why would you kill all the jackrabbits and armadillos? We all looked at each other like, what are you talking about, Pearl?
You want to stop this one and start a fresh one?
Sure.
Because I have some questions I want to ask Dad while he's here. Don't get mad.
Oh, come on, Emily.
Well,
so,
fine.
Did Trapper tell you that my grandmother...
Don't
have to pee.
Don't talk. Don't
need to say...